Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. Ahead of tonight's third and final presidential debate on foreign policy, we will begin with a discussion of how much foreign policy matters in this election and how much the candidates might steer their answers towards domestic issues. David Rothkopf, the editor-at-large of Foreign Policy magazine, joins us. He has an article at Foreign Policy, How Foreign Policy Came to Matter in This Election. Then Professor of International Affairs at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government, Stephen Walt, joins us. He has an article at foreignpolicy.com, Top 10 Questions You Won't Hear at Tonight's Debate, and we will examine the issues likely to be overlooked since the debate will probably be dominated by China bashing and further recriminations that the Romney campaign have seized upon over what happened at the U.S. consulate in Benghazi, Libya. Then finally, we'll try to make sense of the latest polls with Margie Omero, the president and founder of Momentum Analysis, a Democratic public opinion research firm whose clients include Democratic candidates, party committees, and nonprofits. We'll examine the divergent polls to try to determine the likely outcome of an election that has narrowed but still seems to give the incumbent an advantage in the Electoral College. And joining us now is David Rothkopf, who is CEO and editor-at-large of Foreign Policy magazine. He's also president and CEO of Garton Rothkopf and a visiting scholar at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace and the author of Running the World, The Inside Story of the National Security Council and the Architects of American Power and Superclass, The Global Elite and the World They Are Making. His latest book is Power, Inc., and he has an article at Foreign Policy, How Foreign Policy Came to Matter in This Election. Welcome to Background Briefing, David Rothkopf.
Good to be back.
And I find it pretty extraordinary that candidates have basically been told, not the exact questions in advance, but they've been told pretty much what the questions are going to be. What do you make of that?
Well, these debates are all carefully orchestrated all the time, very carefully set up rules and seating arrangements and lighting. And so it's not that surprising that the questions would be hinted at or even vaguely outlined. I think also, though, even had they not been, you would know what the questions would be about.
Well, does that mean, though, that given how critical Ohio is, that, for example, the inevitable China bashing questions will be twisted into domestic issues?
I think everything will be twisted one way or another into a domestic issue. It's increasingly clear that Ohio and perhaps even Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Michigan are central. These are industrial states. They do fear that China has been taking unfair advantage of us in global trade, and I think both candidates will probably go far more extreme in their comments on China than they will actually behave come the next term.
Well, Mitt Romney, in his last debate, he said on day one he'd call China cheaters. I guess he'll walk that one back, but otherwise we'd have a trade war, I imagine.
Well, I think trade relations are going to be a little bit rough in the world for the next couple of years because Europe is soft, we're soft, the big emerging countries are soft, Japan is soft, all the economies are not doing very well. That tends to be when people get their most protectionist. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised if we do. But the reality is that the U.S. economy right now is so interdependent on the Chinese economy that they hit us or we hit them, and very quickly we're going to realize how much is at stake, and we'll walk it back.
Well, in the first debate where China bashing was fairly replete with it, and the currency issue comes up about the China artificially lowering their currency to be more competitive. Neither candidate, of course, mentioned the extent to which China buys our debt and finances our deficit, which is tied in with its currency. So we don't really, none of these, I guess it's too much to expect nuanced and intelligent conversation here.
I don't think anybody ever won a presidential election talking about monetary policy. I don't think it's the kind of thing that resonates with people. Perhaps it should. The reality is that we are deeply indebted to China. Japan, by the way, is just about to pass China again as being the number one creditor of the United States, but we owe a lot to both of them and to a lot of people around the world, and that's not a good thing for us. If our economy falters, however, it's not a good thing for them, so it's a bit of a two-way street.
So, David Rothkopf, let me read from your article, because I think you summarize the situation, certainly as I see it, of where we stand with these debates. Just quoting you, one reason the conventional wisdom became unstuck, and the conventional wisdom being that foreign policy doesn't matter in this election, you're arguing that it does. One reason the conventional wisdom became unstuck was the president's lackluster performance in the first debate. Had Obama won the debate easily, given his lead in the polls at the time, GOP leaders might have started to distance themselves from their nominee, focus on House and Senate races, and start planning long romantic dinners with Marco Rubio, or potentially even longer ones with Chris Christie, with an eye to 2016. And the two remaining debates, including the foreign policy debate, would have mattered less. So, given that the president essentially was a gift to Romney, Romney was pretty much dead in the water, and suddenly, because Obama didn't challenge his etch-a-sketch from 2 years of campaigning as a right-winger to this overnight moderate, I mean, a lot of people have reconsidered him, and basically they're saying to themselves, well, this guy's not as bad as Obama said he was. Maybe Obama's lying. I mean, do you see this as a catastrophe?
Certainly the first debate was produced the biggest swing in an election of any debate that I can remember. It was, I think, a 50%+ swing by some polls in terms of the number of people who thought Romney won versus the number of people who thought Obama won. So it was a very, very big margin. And the story since then has clearly been momentum shifting in Romney's favor. Part of that, I think, was Obama's lackluster performance. Part of that is that Romney was a caricature until he walked up onto that debate stage and he started to talk and act like a human being. And, you know, he has produced some bad policies and he has made a bunch of gaffes. But he's also a thoughtful, accomplished man, you know, with sense of humor and who's done some good things in his life. And so it's hard for him to have stayed the caricature after these debates also.
Well, that's not to say that his trip in the summer abroad, which was supposed to give him foreign policy credentials, you refer to as the global gaffe tour. It certainly was.
You know, it was disastrous. And I think his foreign policies thus far have been, you know, kind of a neocon nostalgia tour also. You know, I mean, it's kind of like, let's go back to the Bush policies. We're going to be tougher. Whatever Obama does, I can do it with more troops, I can do it with more planes, I can do it with more explosions, I'm going to stand up to the Russians, I'm going to stand up to the Iranians, I'm, you know, a lot more testosterone. Having said all of that, in each of the other debates, Romney has, as you indicated, pivoted a bit, moved more towards the center, just as almost all candidates in the Republican Party do, and the Democratic Party, for that matter, when they get into the general election. And the interesting thing to watch tonight is going to be whether Romney can move more to the center and appear more measured and more reasonable and more presidential than he did during that summer of error after error after error.
Again, I'm speaking with David Rothkopf, who's CEO and editor-at-large of Foreign Policy Magazine. He's also president and CEO of Garton Rothkopf and a visiting scholar at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, and is the author of Running the World, The Inside Story of the National Security Council, Superclass, the Global Elite, and the World They Are Making. And his latest book is Power, Inc. He has an article at Foreign Policy, How Foreign Policy Came to Matter in This Election. So given that there'll be probably talk on, let's start with Libya. I mean, the Republicans really think they've got an issue there with Libya. Do you think the president will point out the obvious, which is that Libya is in post-revolutionary chaos, which is not surprising given decades of rule by a dictator, and that, if in effect Syria will end up the same, you know, so since we're not in the business of boots on the ground, what do you expect? You know, that I imagine that's just far too adult a conversation to have, right?
I think it is, although I think the president might well make that kind of an argument effectively because that kind of cool, measured analysis is a strength of his. I think Romney, on the other hand, will say, look, you said that you were going to make us safer. And look at Libya, where al-Qaeda was involved in the attack. Look at Syria, where al-Qaeda is involved. Look at Yemen, where al-Qaeda is involved. Look at Iraq melting down. Look at Afghanistan, where the Taliban is resurgent. The Middle East isn't safer right now. This is because the Middle East is in complete uproar, and it is because the United States can't actually make it that much safer. But that's a very hard argument for the president to make, because Americans do like to think that we're masters of the universe.
So what about then in two of the debates, in the vice presidential debate and in the last presidential debate, both Biden and Obama mentioned that the person who's choosing Romney's judicial nominees is Robert Bork. And that certainly, I think, it gives people pause. But surely if he were to point out that Romney's foreign policy team is dominated by the neoconservatives who brought us the Iraq disaster, the only winner of the Iraq war was Iran, and that unlike him, who, you know, has people that have real foreign policy experience and aren't these reckless utopians who have caused so much damage, doesn't that bring into question Romney's judgment already, that he would bring back this disastrous crew?
Not only does it, I expect you'll hear something almost exactly like what you've just said in the context of the debate. Just as in past debates, you've seen Romney try to pivot to the center, you've also seen Obama try to say Romney's a throwback to Bush policies or Reagan policies that got the U.S. into a lot of trouble. And I think he's going to do that on foreign policy just as he's done it on economic policy. He's going to say, this guy's surrounded by neocons. They want to go back to war in the Middle East. We've seen how reckless that is. We can't afford to do that. This man is dangerous. I think that in some ways, the debate's going to come down to which of these two guys can most effectively make the argument that the other one is more dangerous for the United States than they are.
So what about Israel, the so-called third rail here of U.S. foreign policy? The Romney administration has been making hay and trying to say that Obama put daylight between Israel and the United States. I don't know where he got that idea from. But he keeps repeating it, and he also says that Obama has thrown Israel under the bus. Now, maybe that's playing down in Florida, where the polls seem to have indicated a surge in Romney's favor. But how does the president deal with this? Because it'll obviously come up, particularly, I think, in the context of the red line that Netanyahu drew on that cartoon before the United Nations, vis-a-vis striking Iran sometime in the spring.
Well, I think the president will say what the president has said, which is that we're as close to Israel as we've ever been, that we've got a good open discussion, that he's been talking a lot to Netanyahu, that we're aligned in terms of our objectives, and that he will not allow Iran to get nuclear weapons. And Romney will then say, well, you're not really close to Netanyahu, and you're not really, you know, and you haven't really been fully supportive of them, and you are on the verge of letting Iran get nuclear weapons. And it's going to be kind of he said, she said, because, you know, what's the retort? I personally think the U.S.-Israel relationship's not in particularly good shape. I also don't think that the issue is as important as everybody says it is. I'm sure that the shift in Florida has more to do with the fact that Florida is really a rather conservative state than it does with any sort of predisposition towards Israeli issues. I think, actually, the biggest problem for Israel is that it is becoming a less important political issue in the United States than it's ever been, and that the concern that some of the Israelis feel is not so much the Obama administration. It's that the U.S. Wants out of the Middle East. The U.S. is energy independent. The U.S. would prefer not to spend a lot of money policing that part of the world, and old historical issues are drifting into memory.
So given that in the last election, even though they talked about energy and didn't bring up climate change, which, you know, is a national security issue in lots of other countries, I believe that the CIA have got a division that's looking at climate change as a national security issue. But these two candidates seem to stay away from it. And in terms of what you just said, surely that would be a good teachable moment for the president, wouldn't it, to point out how we've got to diversify our energy use? I mean, one of the things I find extraordinary about the Republicans is that recently in the House, the Secretary of the Navy was castigated by the Republican chairman of a committee because the U.S. Navy has got into biofuels and alternatives because they don't want to be dependent upon the Middle East, particularly with a navy that operates on petroleum and petroleum products. So that seems to be a wise national security decision on the part of the navy to have alternative sources in case there is the Straits of Hormuz are closed, for example. Do you think the president has an opening there?
Sure, I think there's a great opening there. I think you're absolutely right, by the way. I think it's ridiculous that the Republicans would attack the Navy for doing what makes a lot of sense, particularly when it was a Republican administration, the Bush administration, that set ethanol targets for the United States actually at a level above that can be reached. But having said that, there isn't a big international issue that doesn't have energy as a central component of it. Whether it's the Middle East or whether it's climate or whether it's the rise of big emerging powers or whether it's the fact that right now it looks like the Chinese are going to spend more money on alternative energy than every other country in the world. They're going to lead in that technology. We are going to follow so long as we follow the path that Romney and the Republican Party have been advocating. So, I think it's a very important issue. It is an opening for the president. I'm not sure how it will resonate, and you particularly have to look at Ohio, where, sort of borders on the Marcellus Shale region, and where a lot of poor, depressed communities are saying, gee, this shale boom could really be the thing that turns it around, and they see Obama as an opponent of rapid embrace of shale, and therefore energy is a bit of a double-edged sword in some of these key swing states, like Pennsylvania also.
Well, but the president hasn't dealt with the coal issue. The coal people are trying to make him an enemy of coal, and they're pushing this myth of clean coal. And the reason that coal is, it's the market forces that are putting coal out of business, not Obama, because of all this gas that's coming online because of fracking.
Well, actually, the reality is coal's not being put out of business. Coal gets shipped overseas, and somebody else will buy it. They're just not going to buy it here. To be fair, if you ever went in Barack Obama's Senate office, it'd be in the lobby. There were two display cases, one of which was full of coal mining equipment. He's from Illinois, and his views towards coal and are actually much more welcoming of what I agree with you. I think clean coal is a bit of a myth, but he has embraced that myth because it's politically convenient.
Well, just in closing, David Rothkopf, again, editor-at-large at Foreign Policy magazine, where he has an article, How Foreign Policy Came to Matter in This Election. Clearly, the president is not a leftist. He's a centrist. If anything, his foreign policy is quite hawkish, and he's been touting his killing of Osama bin Laden. So in many ways, that will checkmate Romney, because he'll be out hawking Romney on so many issues. But isn't there a danger that he's going to alienate the already alienated American left who are unhappy about the use of drones, et cetera?
I don't think there's any danger that he's going to alienate the left, because the left hears you about Bork and hears you about the neocons and, fears what might happen with the Supreme Court and whether they agree with the president or not on foreign policy. They just can't abide what Romney represents in terms of social policy. But I do think that you're absolutely right and that there is legitimate and important left-wing critique of the president because of drones and kill lists and cyber war and serial violation of the sovereignty of other nations, pulling away from the G20, and most of all, doubling down in Afghanistan, which was costly, catastrophic, and at the end of the day is actually not going to produce any benefit for the United States, measurable or otherwise.
Yeah, that's. I think a lot of people tell me that place is going to really go to hell after this election. So I guess the less said about that, the better, right, for Obama?
From the Obama perspective, absolutely.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us, David Rothkopf.
Thanks a lot. I enjoyed it.
Again, I've been speaking with David Rothkopf, who's CEO and editor-at-large of Foreign Policy magazine. He also is president and CEO of Garton Rothkopf and a visiting scholar at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace and the author of Running the World, The Inside Story of the National Security Council and the Architects of American Power and Superclass, the Global Elite and the World They Are Making. His latest book is Power, Inc., and he has an article at Foreign Policy, How Foreign Policy Came to Matter in This Election. We're going to take a brief station break and we're back talking about the top 10 questions you won't hear at tonight's debate.
handful of senators don't pass legislation, and marches alone can't bring integration. When human respect is disintegrating, this whole crazy world is just too frustrating. And you tell me